It is good to be back with you. The last time I was here was in March, and it's wonderful to be re-invited and to see familiar faces around. I like to joke that pastors love going on vacation when this particular story comes up. It's not always the easiest, especially since we don't even see Jesus in the story. I had a friend, a non-Christian friend in graduate school, who was a little bit fascinated with the fact that I preached most weeks. And each week he'd inquire about my sermon preparation. What are you preaching about? My flip response was usually, probably Jesus. My friend would quip back, oh, that guy. He just keeps showing up week after week. You can't seem to get rid of him, can you? But at first glance, this week's gospel text seems that it may prove my friend wrong. Jesus never once shows up in our gospel reading. It seems that all we have is a brutal tale of the beheading of John the Baptist. It's a story that seems more appropriate coming from some of the headlines of our news feeds these past weeks and months and even years than to a Sunday morning gospel reading. In fact, I was aware of how many young ears were listening as you read this story. So our question then has to be, where in the world does Jesus show up? This morning's gospel story is perhaps one of the strangest ones in our entire New Testament, in the Gospel of Mark in particular. The story is sandwiched between Jesus sending out the disciples to preach and to do miracles, and the disciples' return, which culminates in the feeding of the 5,000. These are two of our favorite stories. It seems, though, when the disciples were sent out on their preaching mission, they've done such a great job with their work that they'd even caught Herod's attention. He knew who Jesus was. He knew the work that Jesus and his disciples were capable of. So while Jesus never shows up in person, the story is never not about Jesus. It seems that Herod and his minions are trying to figure out just who this Jesus guy was. And Jesus, it seems, reminds Herod of John the Baptist. At this point in the story, Mark, our storyteller, takes a break from telling the story of Jesus as a sequence of events, and instead he gives us this flashback to the death of John. It's an event that's happened several years, or at least months, before we get to this point in Jesus' story. Now, whether this flashback is meant to be a foreshadowing of what's going to happen to Jesus, where the Roman regime will hunt him down, or a warning of the evils of listening to headstrong women like Herod's wife, or a way of getting rid of John so that he's not in the way of the Jesus movement, the truth is that we scholars even are conflicted about why this story is even in Mark's gospel. One thing is for sure, though, it's a pretty complex story. And it's difficult to tell the bad guys from the good guys. Let's take Herod, for example. The Herod in this story is Herod Antipas, the son of the Herod under whom Jesus was born. So this is the second generation of Jesus-hating Herods. Now, it's obvious from the story that he's the one who orders the execution of John. He must be the bad guy, right? On the other hand, he does recognize that Jesus is holy, and he does recognize that John is a holy and righteous man, even though he didn't understand John's preaching. Mark tells us he liked to listen. In fact, Mark says that Herod imprisoned John to protect him from Herodias, Herod's own wife. So is Herod a good guy turned bad? Or a good guy with his hands tied by a bad guy? Or a bad guy with a good guy streak? Then there's Herodias, Herod's wife. Herodias was married to Herod's brother when she married Herod. And John, you see, was the one who pointed out that this situation was not quite right. So Herodias, according to Mark, had a vendetta against John and wanted to kill him. And so she uses the opportunity of Herod's own daughter to entrap Herod into just that. But wait. Other ancient sources portray Herodias as less of the plotting, scheming, evil woman and more of a co-conspirator with Herod to keep power and peace in the region. She is, in other accounts, an independent, wealthy, politically savvy woman, the kind of figure we feminists rarely see in antiquity and are loath to cut out of stories. So is Herodias a good guy personified as the evil guy because she's a woman? Is she just a bad guy who we're supposed to hate? Or a bad guy who unfortunately could be a good guy, but Mark decided not to tell us that part of the story? Confusing, huh? Mark's gospel leaves us hanging without a meaning, without an answer, and it seems even without good news. Even Jesus' death ends with the confusion of the empty tomb, not a resurrection appearance. And several decades after the gospel was written, an extended ending was added to include Jesus' resurrection appearance. You see, Mark loves to leave us hanging in these weird, complex, seemingly no good news situations. Mark's world is confusing and complex, both to the characters in the story and the readers in it. Mark doesn't sugarcoat anything. And this story of John is no exception. But sisters and brothers, aren't our lives, isn't our world just as complex and intricate and sometimes seemingly no good news as this story? Few times are we able to discern who is clearly the good guy and who is clearly the bad guy. Even God becomes the villain in our eyes at times when we can't understand why our world suffers under the violence it does, why our world suffers under hatred and inequality and grief. Even God can seem to be the bad character in our stories when we search for answers to death and pain and unfair practices at work, poverty, broken relationships, racism, illness. I could go on and on. Mark's gospel this morning brings the reality of our world and sits it right in our laps, as if to say, not much has changed, huh? There's still war, even in the Middle East, but all over. Prophets are still ignored and killed. The good side still makes mistakes, and the bad side still looks powerfully attractive. And oftentimes, we can't even say who's the good side and who's the bad side. Without clarity on who's good and who's bad, how do we sort out our world? Where does our hope come from? Let's look a little more carefully at this flashback. Mark recounts the story only after Herod has weighed in on the debate about who this Jesus guy is. Herod is puzzled at this man who sends his disciples out to preach and teach and heal. Herod is confounded by the man who sticks to the villages and side streets, who goes to the wrong side of town or to deep in the country. He goes to ordinary people instead of the halls and palaces of power. And as those in high places hear about Jesus, the stories and expectations for who he is begin to multiply. He's Elijah, he's a prophet. But Herod, who ordered and watched John the Baptist's head be presented to his daughter and wife on a serving platter, Herod knew that a particularly powerful power was at work in his world. And Herod silences these voices of speculation and says, John, whom I beheaded, has been raised from the dead. Now, Herod may not have been right about Jesus being John, but his statement recognizes the potential power that Jesus held, the power that we already know Jesus has. It's the power of resurrection. Resurrection was already part of Herod's world, but its power had not yet been fully realized. What Herod did know, though, was the potential subversive, flip the world on its head power of resurrection. Resurrection offered the possibility of erasing even the most brutal tangle of conspiracy, entrapment, imprisonment, intrigue, torture, and murderous violence. Resurrection's power also knew nothing of the Roman political elite or aristocratic family lines or even of imprisonment and henchmen. Resurrection's power embodied and renewed, recreated and restored, regenerated the intensity of imagination among people who followed Jesus. Sisters and brothers, not much has changed since Mark's day. The good guys and the bad guys are still often inseparable. Our world is filled with racism and violence, even in the most sacred of places, as we learned 2 weeks ago. War and violence and brutality, even beheadings. What has changed from then at John's death to now at our lives? It's that the power of resurrection is not just a potential. The power of resurrection has been fulfilled. Jesus' resurrection, even from the most brutal of deaths, brings new life, new hope, new imaginings into our world. Because, you see, each day we live and relive the drama of Jesus' death and resurrection through our baptism. Each day we as a community live and relive the drama of grief and hope through Jesus' presence in our midst, right here. Each day, we as a world, we relive the cycle of violence and peace. Our challenge, then, from this morning's gospel is to embrace that renewed, restored, regenerated imagination of a world resilient through resurrection's presence. Resurrection's power, you see, is embodied among the people who follow Jesus. It's embodied among us who follow Jesus. We get to be that fulfilled power in the world. You see, that Jesus, he just keeps showing up. Amen.